This article is brought to you by the best-selling booksie Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackhorn. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to draft a mediation agreement that courts will recognise. Turn a verbal settlement into a legally sound document that holds. In short, a mediation agreement only protects people if it is written with precision. Verbal settlements collapse under pressure. Capture every term in writing before the parties leave the room. Use specific language, names, amounts, dates, and consequences, nothing vague. Structure the document so any court can read it and understand exactly what was agreed. Definition: mediation agreement drafting is the process of turning a verbal settlement into a written, signed contract. It records each party's obligations, the dispute context, and the consequences of non-compliance in language clear enough for a court to recognise and enforce. I watched a 2-year workplace dispute unravel in a single afternoon. Both sides had shaken hands. Both had walked away convinced the matter was finished. But nobody had written anything down with any precision. 6 weeks later, one party claimed the agreement meant something different. The other said that was never discussed. The mediator had no document to point to. The case went to court anyway, at 3 times the cost and 2x the bitterness. That moment taught me something I have never forgotten. The mediation agreement is not a formality. It is the work. Drafting a document that courts will actually recognise is harder than most people expect. The conversation may have gone well. The room may have felt warm and resolved. But the moment you put terms on paper, the gaps appear. Vague phrases that sounded reasonable in the room suddenly mean 3 different things in writing. This guide gives you a clear, ordered process for mediation agreement drafting so that what you produce holds up when it counts. Why mediation agreements fail before they ever reach a judge. The failure usually happens long before a courtroom. It happens at the drafting table, or more accurately, at the absence of one. Most mediators are skilled at guiding conversations. Fewer are trained in the specific discipline of translating those conversations into durable written terms. The spoken word allows ambiguity. Parties hear what they hope to hear. Written language forces precision, and that precision is exactly where agreements break down. Courts look for 4 things in any binding agreement offer: acceptance, consideration, and capacity. If your mediation agreement is missing any one of these, a judge can set it aside entirely. Beyond those legal basics, courts also look at specificity. An agreement that says party A will repay party B in a reasonable time is not enforceable. Reasonable to whom? By when? Under what conditions? If you want to understand how tension shapes these conversations before you ever reach drafting, the work of keeping a conversation grounded during conflict matters as much as the document itself. The quality of your agreement reflects the quality of the conversation that produced it. What must be true before you write a single word? Before mediation agreement drafting begins, 2 things must be confirmed. Skip either and you are building on sand. First, the agreement must be genuinely voluntary. Each party must have entered mediation and reached settlement without coercion. If one party was pressured, threatened, or misled, no drafting skill in the world will make that agreement enforceable. Courts look hard at voluntariness in contested cases. Second, every party must have the legal capacity to sign. This means they are of sound mind, of legal age, and, if they represent an organisation, they hold actual authority to bind that organisation. I have seen agreements collapse because the person who signed lacked signing authority within their company. Confirm this before the session ends. How to draft a mediation agreement step by step. Step 1. Write the recitals. The recitals are the opening section. They answer the basic questions: who are the parties, what is the dispute, and why are they here? Useful legal names, not nicknames or job titles. Identify each party's role, whether they are individuals, business entities, or representatives. State the nature of the dispute in 2 or 3 sentences, factual and neutral. This is not a blame section. It is a context section. For example, this agreement is entered into by Maria Connell Claimant and Dalton Supplies Limited, represented by its director, Thomas Dalton, respondent, in relation to a commercial dispute arising from contract No. 4471, dated 14 March 2023. That sentence tells a court everything it needs to know about who agreed to what, and in what context. Step 2. State the terms of settlement. This is the heart of the document, and it is where most drafts fail. Each term must answer 4 questions: who, what, by when, and how. Never write party A will compensate party B. Write party A will pay party B the sum of £4,500 by bank transfer to the account specified in Schedule A, no later than 14 days from the date of this agreement. List each obligation separately, numbered. Do not bundle two obligations into one paragraph. If the settlement has five distinct obligations, write five distinct numbered terms. Courts read these documents under stress. Clarity is your primary tool. When an obligation involves an ongoing behaviour rather than a one-time action, such as agreeing to change a workplace practice, describe the behaviour in observable terms. Party B will cease communicating with Party A's clients directly is enforceable. Party B will act professionally is not. For disputes involving teams and interpersonal dynamics, the skills covered in how to resolve conflicts fracturing team synergy can help you translate behavioural commitments into language specific enough to put in writing. Step 3. Include a confidentiality clause if appropriate. Not every mediation agreement needs a confidentiality clause, but when the dispute involves sensitive business information, personnel matters, or reputational concerns, it is essential. A confidentiality clause should specify what information is protected, who it is protected from, and for how long. It should also state what happens if a party breaches it. Vague confidentiality clauses provide almost no protection. A workable example. Both parties agree to keep the terms of this agreement and all communications made during the mediation session confidential from all third parties, with the exception of their respective legal advisors, for a period of 3 years from the date of signing. Step 4. Define the consequences of breach. Many agreements skip this step entirely. That is a mistake. An agreement without a breach remedy is a wish list. State clearly what happens if a party does not comply. This might include financial penalties, a return to mediation, or the right to seek a court order. The remedy must be proportionate and realistic. Do not threaten consequences you cannot actually enforce. Some agreements include a cure period, a defined window within which a party can correct a breach before formal action begins. This is especially useful in ongoing business relationships. For example, should either party fail to fulfill any obligation under this agreement, the non-breaching party shall provide written notice, and the breaching party shall have 10 business days to remedy the failure before further action is taken. Understanding what drives people to test or break agreements often comes down to unmet needs beneath the conflict itself. The deeper dynamics behind those patterns are worth exploring in how unmet needs drive team conflict. Step 5. Add a governing law and jurisdiction clause. This clause tells any court which country's or region's law applies to the agreement and which courts have jurisdiction over disputes about it. In cross-border disputes or agreements involving parties from different regions, this is not optional. Even in purely local disputes, including a governing law clause removes ambiguity. Keep it simple. This agreement shall be governed by and construed in accordance with the laws of England and Wales, and any disputes arising from it shall be subject to the exclusive jurisdiction of the courts of England and Wales. Step 6. Include a mutual release if appropriate. A mutual release is a clause in which both parties agree that, once the terms of the agreement are fulfilled, they will not pursue further legal claims related to the same dispute. It brings genuine finality. Not every agreement needs a release. Ongoing commercial relationships may not want to close all future claim rights so completely. But for one-time disputes with a clean endpoint, a mutual release protects both parties and signals that the matter is truly resolved. Step 7. Execute the document properly. Execution is the step people rush. Do not rush it. Every party must sign, and every signature must be dated. In many jurisdictions, agreements are strengthened by having signatures witnessed or notarized. If a party is represented by a solicitor or legal advisor, confirm whether that representative's signature is also required to bind the organization. Produce at least two original signed copies, one for each party. If the agreement is to be submitted to a court for approval and conversion into a consent order, check the specific procedural requirements of that court before submission. Adapting this process for high-conflict disputes. In high-conflict disputes, the drafting process carries extra weight. Parties who struggled to agree during the session will scrutinize every word on the page. Small ambiguities become accusations of bad faith. In these cases, draft the terms in the room, with both parties present. Do not retire to draft alone and return with a finished document. Let each party see each term written as it is agreed. Read each clause aloud before moving to the next. This slows the process, but eliminates the claim that something was misrepresented in writing. For disputes that reached the table only after earlier conversations collapsed, the methods for diffusing heated conversations and handling conflict during meetings will have shaped the ground you're now trying to hold in writing. The agreement must honour the fragility of that ground. In high conflict settings, also consider adding an implementation review clause, a scheduled date, perhaps 30 or 60 days after signing, when both parties confirm compliance. This is not a threat. It is a structure that builds confidence in the process on both sides. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling books 8 Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. 3 mistakes that undermine otherwise good agreements. The mistake: using vague language because it felt less confrontational in the room. Why it happens: mediators sometimes soften terms to keep both parties comfortable, but vagueness that feels like diplomacy in conversation becomes a dispute waiting to happen on paper. What to do instead? Replace every evaluative word with a measurable one. Soon becomes a date. Adequate becomes a specific figure. Reasonable efforts becomes a defined action with a deadline. The mistake: leaving obligations unsigned because one party needed to run it past someone. Why it happens: parties sometimes lack full authority in the room and delay execution, hoping to revisit terms later. What to do instead? Confirm signing authority before the session begins, not at the end of it. If authority is genuinely uncertain, adjourn execution to a confirmed date rather than allowing an unsigned draft to circulate. The mistake: omitting consequences for breach because nobody wants to appear distrustful. Why it happens: it feels adversarial to plan for failure during a moment of resolution. What to do instead? Frame the breach clause as a neutral safeguard, not a threat. Tell both parties: this clause is here so neither of you has to wonder what happens if something goes wrong. It protects you both. For de-escalation scripts that help you hold difficult moments before they derail the drafting conversation, the word-for-word scripts for de-escalating tension resource gives you language you can use immediately. Similarly, the deal method for resolving workplace tension can help you navigate the moment when drafting itself becomes a source of friction. Your mediation agreement drafting checklist. Use this before every agreement leaves the room. Number 1. Full legal names and roles of all parties are stated in the opening section. Number 2. The dispute is described factually in 2 to 3 neutral sentences. Number 3. Every obligation is written in specific, measurable terms: who, what, amount or action, deadline. Number 4. Each obligation is listed as a separate number term. Number 5. A confidentiality clause is included if the dispute involves sensitive information. Number 6. Breach consequences and any cure period are clearly stated. Number 7. A governing law and jurisdiction clause is present. Number 8. A mutual release clause is included where appropriate. Number 9. Every party is signed, with the date of signing recorded. Number 10. The signing authority of each representative has been confirmed. Number 11. At least 2 original signed copies have been produced. Number 12. If court submission is planned, the specific procedural requirements of that court have been checked. The document is the last act of mediation, not an afterthought. There is a temptation to treat drafting as administrative work, something to do quickly once the real work of reaching agreement is done. That temptation will cost you. The document is where the agreement either holds or breaks. Everything that happened in the room before depends on what you put on the page. Here's the truth of it: a court does not know what was said, what was felt, or how hard both sides worked to reach that handshake. All a court sees is the document. Mediation agreement drafting is the discipline of making sure the document tells the full, precise, and complete story of what was actually agreed, in language no one can argue about later. Master the discipline, and you give the people you serve something genuinely worth having, a resolution that stays resolved. Frequently asked questions. What is mediation agreement drafting? Mediation agreement drafting is the process of converting a verbal settlement reached through mediation into a written, signed document. It captures each party's obligations, the terms they agreed to, and the consequences of non-compliance so that courts can recognise and enforce the settlement. How do you make a mediation agreement legally binding? To make a mediation agreement legally binding, it must be written, signed by all parties with legal capacity, and contain clear, specific terms, including consideration, a governing law clause, and signatures witnessed or notarized strengthens enforceability. Vague language and unsigned drafts are the most common reasons courts refuse to uphold them. What should a mediation agreement include? A mediation agreement should include the full names and roles of all parties, a clear description of the dispute, the specific terms of settlement, deadlines for compliance, consequences for breach, a confidentiality clause if needed, and dated signatures from every party. Each term must be specific enough to leave no room for interpretation. Can a mediation agreement be enforced in court? Yes, a mediation agreement can be enforced in court when it meets the legal standards of a binding contract offer, acceptance, consideration, and the capacity of all parties to sign. Courts scrutinize vague language and missing signatures closely. A well-drafted agreement reduces the chance of a court refusing enforcement. What is the difference between a mediation agreement and a court order? A mediation agreement is a contract formed voluntarily between parties. A court order is imposed by a judge. A mediation agreement can be submitted to a court for approval and converted into a consent order, giving it the same enforcement power as a judge's ruling. Not all agreements require this step. How long should a mediation agreement be? Length depends on the complexity of the dispute, not on any fixed rule. A straightforward two-party settlement might need 2 pages. A multi-issue commercial dispute could require 10 or more. The test is completeness, not length. Every obligation, deadline, and remedy must be clearly stated, regardless of how many pages that takes. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.